Welcome to the Brothers Murph Get Smart, a weekly podcast where two brothers, namely myself, Michael Lee Murphy,
and myself, Nick Murray,
attempt to become more knowledgeable about this world and all the things in it, because we're a couple of dum-dums, as we like to call
we're
ourselves.
We're stupid, there.
we're real.
Those two are real dum-dums,
we're
there.
Real and smart, is what we are. So we're here to ask the stupid questions, you guys, so you guys don't have to. You don't have to sound, like, dumb in front of people. Let us bear that burden for you.
We'll be the unintelligent-formed ones for you.
Indeed. You're welcome. Anyway, joining us from D.C., we have the man, the legend.
Hey, it's me. It's Dylan White.
Yes, sir, it is. Great White somewhere. See, I'm teasing it, Nick. I'm teasing it right now, what we're getting into.
Your new Ethel album? Is that what you're
doing? New Ethel album. In turn, Ethel is ethereal.
I used to call me on my cell phone.
Cell phone.
She does sweet.
We are going to be talking about a tale as old as time.
What?
Something that's been told for many a moon. And we're doing it because we have a new movie coming out this week. I don't know if you guys have heard of this.
Gone in 60 Seconds.
Yes. Two. Gone in 60 Seconds 2, the long awaited sequel. Tales Old as Time, Boosting Cars, and Nick Cage.
Guys, can I just say tips. How amazingly excited I'd be if somewhere out there they just dropped on 60 Seconds 2. Made
and like everyone's in on it, like Giovanni Ribisi's in. Like Christopher Eccleston's back.
Angie's in.
Scott Cann passed. He passed. Passed on that phone. No, we're talking about Beauty and the Beast, you guys. There's a new film coming out, a live action, Emma Watson, Dan Stevens, and literally every other actor we love, pretty much. We got Obi-Wan Kenobi and Gandalf hanging out.
Wait.
Like that.
Ewan McGregor.
Obi-Wan and Gandalf were in that?
Dude, like, yes. Ewan McGregor, Ian McKellen.
Yeah.
I've not seen any of the trailers for this movie at all.
Literally everyone.
I don't know why we allow you on.
Good thing that we've linked it on our website.
Hell yeah, we
check out the trailer.
Get your tics now.
We got trailers. Yeah.
Oh my god. Anyway, so our guest this week is a bona fide Disney expert.
Wait.
Okay, and lover of fairy tales.
Is Ewan McGregor playing Gaston?
No, he's playing Lumiere.
Lumiere, dude.
Oh, that's great.
Lumiere and Cogsworth. We're going to get into all that, okay?
Okay.
So our guest this week is none other than the iconic Casey Brown. Give it up, ladies and gentlemen.
Hello, it's me. It's Casey.
Finally got her. Months trying to get on the podcast.
God, man. It was really about the rate. She wouldn't come in for less than like $4 million in equity on the back end, you guys. And I'm like, podcasts don't have equity. They don't make money.
It's true.
But
I'm still waiting. I have the contract ready to sign.
Nick, we got it. We can't sign that thing. No,
we're not. Guys, you got to eat that contract. There.
Yeah. We're going to eat that right up. So anyway, Casey's going to guide us through the origins, I believe, of this tale.
Kind of like a pseudo sequel to our Snow White episode. Not exactly, but it's going to be kind of similar to that one.
We're going to look at the original versions of Beauty and the Beast and how the Disney movie from the 90s, mm-hmm. the cartoon, stacks up in preparation for the exciting Friday release of the new film.
There you go.
If you haven't, listeners, listened to our Snow White episode, one of the reasons why we like to do these is because usually the original version is super weird. And there's always really weird versions, like, all across the globe.
Yeah.
And it's really fun to talk about. Especially Snow White had some super weird versions. And so, like, after this one, go download that one and listen to that one, too, because it's really, really weird.
Yeah, definitely worth a listen. So go check that out. It's one of our early episodes when y'all sounded like little babies.
We're
like, goo goo gaga.
What's it like?
White?
What's this microphone? What do we do?
They made her dance till she died. Spoiler alert. do check that out, guys, and we'll have links to that as well. So Casey, when's the first time that some like lady got down with a beast?
Let's get in.
Let's just jump right into it. Well, like most fairy tales, it's a very old story that's been told in cultures across the world time and time again. So a lot of what you'll read or hear online would point to the versions that came out in France in the 1700s, but the story actually starts way sooner than that. So the original one of the first versions is from Cupid and Psyche, which is written in the second century CE by Apuleius. I'm gonna mispronounce a lot. So sorry.
And that's where Cupid came down and said, like, I'm gonna make you fall in love. She's like, really? He's like, psych! And he like shot a deer.
Yes, that's what Cupid and Psyche's about.
End of story.
That's it.
It's actually pretty cool. It's considered the first ever literary fairy tale. Cupid and Psyche, this really? this kind of written form, and it existed in myth form prior to.
Yeah.
But it's called there's this whole way that fairy tales are classified. It's really interesting. If it's kind of like the Dewey Decimal System for fairy tales that some people did in the early turn of this century, the last century. So if you're interested, yeah, nerds, but interesting. So the Beauty and the Beast story is considered the search for the lost husband trope of a fairy tale.
Okay.
So there's a lot of stories in that vein. And so Cupid and Psyche, really high level overview is that basically Venus was jealous of Psyche and so sent her to like a palace with a monster, and the monster was Cupid, but Cupid was super hot, and so they ended up getting married. So like, you have to marry a monster, but the condition is you can never look at your husband ever. And so Cupid would come in at night and they'd bone down, but it was all dark and they could never see. And then one day finally Psyche looks at Cupid and she has to do all these tasks to like get back to him. It's a whole thing.
She's like, you're a little baby.
He's just like, no, Cupid is like Adonis. I mean, Cupid is in this version.
This is like the portrayal of Jesus in the Sistine Chapel where he's just ripped.
Yeah.
You guys seen Cupid that? He's like portrayed after a Greek god. He's like, I'm here to judge you all.
It's not a cherubic Cupid. It is an adult man.
Oh, got it. Okay. Yeah.
That would have been funnier if he was still the baby.
So that's like, kind of
where's my bottle, lady?
I ain't got no baby dick.
Ew. So anyway,
guys,
that's
in a dark place.
Yeah.
My B.
That's daylight saving, guys. I'm sorry. We're all looped out.
I lost my hour. I don't know what to do.
That's kind of one of the first kind of versions where it's like a woman who's has to marry somebody who is considered a monster.
A beast.
But there's even an earlier version.
I'm all beast.
Yeah, that we know of. So the print version is from 500 AD, but it comes from oral tradition way earlier than that. And it's from India, and it's called The Woman Who Married a Snake. So the print version is in Pantra Tantra. Sorry. So you can read that, but it's about a woman who has to, that's one of the earliest oral history versions. And then you have the Greek version, a bunch of other versions throughout time that where the beast has been replaced by other animals. Snake is pretty popular. There's Russian, Chinese, and Greek versions where it's a woman marrying a snake. There's a version of a woman marrying a small-toothed dog in an English variant.
Of course.
There's
a little Yorkie. He's just like, yip, yip, me and my wife. You're my wife. Bok, bok.
There's a Swiss version called the Bear Prince. And the weirdest one to me, for some reason, is the Danish version, which is called Beauty and the Horse. I don't know. That's just weird.
Trying to act like that fairy tale Tony's ass today. You got some dark corners of the internet.
Beauty and the Horse.
Beauty and the Horse.
So those are just.
I'm going to marry you. Nay. You shan't. It's a very proper horse.
So those are some of the versions. And in most versions, one of the kind of motifs that you see throughout is that the beast never forces his physical desires upon the woman.
All right.
The exception being the Italian version, of course, called Zelinda and the Monster, where the snake, it's a snake again, literally says to her, I will kill your father if you don't marry me and bone down with me. So he forces her.
We're going to have sexual relations.
So well, anyway, it's
we're going to engage in coitus.
That's where the stories come from in the past, but the ones that we know come from France in the mid 1700s. So the first one that we can point to is by Gabrielle Suzanne Barbeau de Villeneuve.
Suzanne de Barbeau de Villeneuve.
It's long.
At some point, we're going to have a linguist on this show to explain to us
all the terrible
ways we're mispronouncing everything.
Sorry, guys.
We go through episode by episode and just rename all these people because you butchered everything.
Anybody who wants to correct us, please let me know.
Yeah, we're not doing it out of malice. We're doing it out of ignorance. I just want to make that clear.
That's why we have this podcast.
I just don't understand how to say French words. So she's a French novelist, and it was published in 1740. It was called La Belle et la Bête, which is the French version of Beauty and the
Beast. I'm La Belle et la Bête.
And it was in the collection of fairy tales called La Jeune, it's the Young American and Marine Tales. I'm not even going to try to say the French name.
Cool.
Yeah. And so that one is really long, varies depending on where it's printed, between 100 and 200 pages.
Wow.
And it has so this is the kind of the oldest version, a la the Grimm story, is the one that we're familiar with, but it's very different. So if you remember, in Snow White, when we talked about it, there was kind of like an 1812 version and an 1819 version. Yeah. And the 1819 version is the one we all know. This is like the 1812 version.
Okay. Oh. Before they lightened up a little bit.
It's not that it was darker. It's that there was like hundreds of like 100 pages of genealogy and like family tree stuff. So there's a lot of detail about the Beast backstory, about Belle's backstory. A lot of subplots in this one.
The Beast is descended from Prince Wilhelm von Schlüsselburg.
At one point in the genealogy, someone banged a beetle,
and that's why he's a beast.
It's actually really interesting, the Beast's backstory in this 1740 version. His dad died when he was really young, and his mom is a badass and has to wage war to keep her kingdom.
Sweet.
And so she can't really parent her young child, so he's left in the hands of a fairy who turns out to be wicked, and when he grows old enough, the fairy tries to seduce him so that she can have the kingdom, and the Beast is like, nah, so she turns him, he's a prince at this point, and she turns him into a beast because of that, and
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, so it's a weird story of like raising a child and then trying to seduce that child when he becomes a man.
She defied gravity and flew off into the
tale as old as time.
Yeah, right.
And Belle in that one is she's like raised by a merchant, but she's actually the offspring of a fairy and a king. So she's royalty too.
Hmm. Interesting.
So that's the Villeneuve version, which. So anyway, that one is the 1741 that is kind of started this again, but is not the version we know. The one that we know now was kind of republished, abridged, and rewritten by Jean Marie Le Prince de Beaumont in 1756. So she and it was kind of scandalous when it happened because she didn't really acknowledge the Villeneuve version. So she kind of was like, I made this story, guys. And so for a long time, Beauty and the Beast was credited to Beaumont.
Oh, really?
When really everyone was like, there was a version that was like 20
years
earlier.
Check out this hot new story.
Yeah. It was in her children's collection. And it really pared down the story. So instead of 100 pages, you had like 10. And it really became a more like a moral story for children.
Yeah.
So,
as a lot of fairy tales are.
Yeah, it took out all the backstory details and that kind of stuff. But again, similar to all the versions, there's themes of envy, unrewarded, learning to love what it first may appear a beast, the benefits of virtues and selflessness, and all that crap. So,
all that good fairy tale stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. So Beaumont's version is unique in a couple ways. It's shorter, but it was also even just it was published about 30 years before the French Revolution. Okay. And so it differs from a lot of fairy tales of the time in that it's set in an urban setting. So it's like they start in a city in Paris and then have to go to the country, which is
like the Beast just lives in an apartment.
Belle, Beauty and her family, like they live in the city and they have to move to the country.
Gotcha.
And the class of characters in terms of Beauty, she's not royal and she's not a peasant. So she's a merchant class person.
Oh, okay.
And part of that comes from the kind of changing attitudes in the French society at that time, where they were kind of less about the aristocracy, more about like merchant class people, working people. And so it's kind of unique to this version of the story. Cool. It just spoke directly to like the social concerns of the day.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
She works hard for the money.
So that's kind of the preamble to the stories.
Well, let's get into the amble then, man. That sounds good. You set the stage well.
Yes.
Yeah. So the original story and the Disney movie are, I guess the Disney movie, it came out in 1991. Mm-hmm. Walt Disney tried to make it in the 30s and then the 50s again, but was unhappy with the story both times. And so kind of abandoned it. Mm-hmm. And there's a really popular live action version of the movie in 1946 that also kind of deterred him. He's like, everybody likes this version. Like, yeah. Why would I make it?
Right.
And,
is that like the French version?
Yeah. Cocteau.
Yeah.
And he wanted directed. He wanted to make an animated version of it, right? Mm-hmm. Always. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. And so they ended up in the Disney Renaissance reintroducing the idea after the success of The Little Mermaid. So the 1991 movie came about with the same. So it was Howard Ashman and Alan Menken did the music, mm-hmm. which they did Little Mermaid. It was the 30th Disney animated feature film.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I know, right?
Beauty and the Beast,
wow. Yes.
Wow. Cool.
And so it was directed by Gary Trousdale and Kirk Wise and written by Linda Wolverton. It was the first animated movie to have a screenplay. Normally they're storyboarded, so they took it seriously. Cool. So it's kind of the preface, I guess, to the Disney version. And we'll talk more about it. But
cool.
That's kind of where that one sits. So they're very different tales. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah,
shocker.
But the original story from Beaumont starts with a rich merchant who has 3 sons and 3 daughters. So there's a difference. More kids. Disney probably took the siblings out because the sisters are very mean in this story and are pretty similar to Cinderella.
Yeah, but so they wanted to. It's kind of a trope that happens a lot. Yeah,
they wanted to make it different. Beauty is what we're going to call her, and she's the youngest daughter, and everyone when she was little called her the little beauty because she was so pretty, and it stuck. So that's what
classic fairy tale. But like, look at that 4-year-old; she sure is pretty.
Seriously, though, there's a weird thing with creeping. Pretty children.
God.
Yeah. So
but anyway, she's a precious little thing.
So the first difference is siblings, and her dad's a merchant, and in the Disney movie he's an inventor, and she has no siblings. True. So
there you go.
Her older sisters sucked in the original. They were really proud and basically just partied all the time and laughed at Beauty because she wanted to read. So they were great.
Yep.
Classic, I guess, is the first Revenge of the Nerds.
Look at you reading.
And in the story, we
have old-timey cocaine.
In the story,
mostly just horse hoof.
It literally says in the story about Beauty, the youngest, as she was handsomer, was also better than her sisters. So they don't want there to be any confusion about who's good in this
it's true.
Version.
Not only is she pretty, she's also very good.
Yeah, so Beauty and so the older sisters were just jerks. Like, they were mean to Beauty all the time, just relentlessly made fun of her. They wouldn't let anyone court them unless they were like a duke or an earl, even though they weren't royal themselves, but they just thought a lot of themselves.
What's your name? Gary, get out. We're waiting for Duke.
So, and Beauty courted all these men and was very kind to them and said, I'm sorry, I'm too young and I want to stay with my father, but thank you.
Aww.
So she's just like really awesome in every way.
How old is she in the story?
It doesn't really say. She's the youngest daughter.
Like early teens, maybe?
At this point in the story, I would guess maybe 13 or 14.
Okay, cool.
So
suiting age.
Yeah, yeah. You know, people start courting, but she said, I'm too young and I want to stay with my dad.
That's cool.
And so that's, again, another big difference in this version and Beauty and the Beast, the movie, is there's no Gaston figure. So there's no other male suitor that's competing for Beauty's love or Belle's love.
Bummer.
I mean, the sisters are kind of Gaston-ish in terms of, like, they're very proud and they're very, like, I'm the top, only dukes can court me.
Yeah,
kind of thing, you know?
The
like,
sisters are the villains in the original more than anything versus having like a Gaston macho dude.
Yeah, yeah. That's cool.
So in a way, there are a lot more similarities in these two stories than Snow White and its original incarnation, in that Beauty likes to read. It's very important to her. She's very smart. She is different than her siblings, and so like Belle in the movie is very different from the townsfolk. And at that scene in the opening number, all the whole song's about how she's super weird. So
yeah, she's just like, I did all that, and everyone's like, all right, well, back to my horse now.
Which
you go on with that.
The opening number to me, I'm like, she's not weird because she reads. She's weird because she's literally talking to sheep. Like, that's the weird part.
She's definitely a weird person. Everyone in the village is like, their opinion is fine there.
She's a weirdo, but cool, I guess.
Yeah, she's fine. One thing I like about that opening number, it's like, there's no malice in anyone. They're not like, look at this freaking weirdo.
They just don't understand.
It's just like, they're just like, she's weird.
Yeah.
You know, but she's Belle. You know, and that's what I like about it. It's like, yeah, they're all like, she's very odd, but no one like does it with any kind of malice or ill intent. It's just like, no, she's just different and kind of an oddball, but you know, look at her father. Yeah. You know, kind of thing.
Yeah, it's kind of like the apple didn't fall from the far from the tree there, but you know.
So fun fact too about the Disney movie, Belle, the way she looks is very modeled after like Judy Garland in Wizard of Oz. So the blue dress and the brown hair and everything.
That makes sense. Yeah. I mean, she does look like Dorothy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I didn't put that together, but yeah.
Right on. And so the dad in the original, the pop who is this merchant guy,
Maurice.
He loses his fortune. None of the characters have names in the fairy tale, which is pretty common. But the father loses his whole fortune. And so they have to move, all the siblings and the dad have to move to the country and start working for their living. Mm. And the older daughters, surprisingly, are not happy about this.
Yeah.
And so what they did was they're like, no, we're staying in the city because we have lovers and suitors and they're going to still want us. And they didn't. They had no money.
Yeah.
And so everybody in town thought, everyone in this original story, the town people basically thought like the older sisters were getting exactly what they deserved by losing their fortune. But then they all worried for Beauty because she was so kind and good. And so they thought she didn't kind of, you know, like, and there were men in the town who would have even still courted Beauty, but she, even with no money, but she wanted to stay with her father in his time of need. So she's just awesome. And so the sisters are like crying and all this stuff, and Beauty in the original, she's really cool because she like never cries, and it's a point of the story of like, no, and so
she's dead inside.
Yeah, she's dead inside.
Well, she stares at them with the soulless eyes.
She says about the loss of the fortune. She says, "Were I to cry ever so much, that would not make things better. I must try to make myself happy without a fortune." So she's just really cool. Yeah, very thoughtful and important and facts. Yeah. So and this is all,
I like this version of Beauty.
Yeah, this is an okay thing. Yeah.
And so this is kind of similar to the Beauty and the Beast movie because they both live in provincial towns.
Yeah.
In Beauty and the Beast, the movie, we don't know why they live where they live. We just know that like Belle doesn't want to be there really. And
well, in the Beauty and the Beast movie, it seems like they've never lived anywhere else. Like she's singing about like there must be more than this provincial town and stuff.
Yeah. So they live there. These people have to move there, and they go work. And the dad and the sons in the original story, they work all the time. And Belle or Beauty, she gets up at 4 a.m. and every day and does all the household chores, makes dinner,
gets in a sweet set of Pilates.
I mean, she does everything, like everything around the house, and she still has time to read and play the harpsichord and spin while she's singing. So she's just very accomplished.
Yeah, spin classes back then?
Yeah.
So in a harpsichord, she's just hitting chopsticks over and over.
Spin like a Rumpelstiltskin, like that kind of spinning. And her sisters, of course, did nothing. So they like complained all day about living in the life they lived. And they were actually mad at Beauty for adapting so well.
Of course, yeah.
Beauty, quit being so productive and fetch me a mimosa.
Pretty much.
Tired of this.
Yeah. And the dad loved Beauty the best, it says in the story. Duh. And
I mean,
she,
you would.
Yeah, because yeah. she does all the work, and she, on top of that, puts up with every, like, her sisters are just insulting her while she's doing all this work all day.
Hey, well, fatty!
The dad obviously fucked up with the rest of the family. So yeah. She's well, the only one that, like, turned out all
right. You finally
the,
got it
the
right.
The sons are, like, not talked about, really. They seem okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The daughters, the other ones, just seem are terrible. And so they lived in the country for about a year, and then news of one of the dad's vessels, I guess one of his merchant vessels, arrives in the harbor, and so they think maybe they could get their fortune back. It was like thought to be lost at sea and now comes back. And so all of this is very different because the beast isn't introduced into the story or the thought of it until like well into, you get a lot of backstory about the merchant and his family. Yeah. And in the Disney movie, it opens with the scene about the beast getting cursed. So
yeah, I was going to say, like, I really are interested in Belle's whole family dynamic, which is cool, but like, where that beast at?
Well, that's the, yeah, I mean, and that the Disney movie originally, they had worked all this into the script where she had like a mean aunt and a mean sister, and then they scrapped that all because they thought it's too similar to Cinderella and started again. Yeah. So, so it takes a lot longer in the original to get to the beast castle and everything.
Okay.
But they, so they live in the country for about a year. This vessel comes back, and so the sisters, thinking they're going to have their fortune back, ask the dad for a bunch of gifts, like, give me gowns and go buy me this when you get all your money back. And Beauty, in her amazing selflessness, first she asks for nothing, but so that she doesn't make her sisters feel bad for asking for gifts, she asks her dad for a rose. She's like, I don't want my sisters to think that I'm trying to be contrarian, so I guess I'll just ask for a rose. And so, because roses don't grow in the part of the country they're in. So, she only asks so her sisters don't think she was trying to be above them. She doesn't really care about getting this rose, which is like important to the story.
She's just trying to hold the family together, man.
Yeah.
She's the glue.
Yeah.
And so the
she's like, if you guys have ever seen Shameless,
yeah,
you know, like the show on Showtime, like the one that's just like holding that family completely together is
she's Emmy Rossum. Yeah.
She's Emmy Rossum in Shameless. Yeah.
Pretty much. The one thing too about this fairy tale that's cool is that the dad is like pretty involved and and like is a good dad, isn't some like terrible parent.
Yeah, he's busting his butt for these ungrateful whelps.
And that's similar to the Disney version. Yeah, yeah. You have a very caring, good dad. Yeah.
He seems kind of insane. He needs to go to an asylum.
Oh, he's definitely insane. But like,
who invents things? How crazy. We have everything we need. We got big elephant rifles and baguettes. We're set. Don't need anything else.
To be fair, that does seem like everything I need.
It covers a lot. It's true.
Yeah.
True.
So the dad leaves to get all his stuff from the boat. And realizes as when he gets there, basically it's like all collected against him as debt. So he comes back like as poor as ever. He doesn't get anything from this journey of finding a vessel. It's all seized by different collectors and stuff.
Classic, man. Poor people getting kicked while they're down.
Yeah. It's pretty terrible. And so he's like, he feels really bad that he can't like get his asshole daughters all the stuff they want. But he's happy to go back and see his family.
You think he like makes like a gown out of twigs? He's like, I hope this will suffice. It shan't, Baba. Just breaks it down.
So this again, it's like one difference in Beauty and the Beast, the movie. There's not as much motivation about like financial gain or recouping. It's more like his name and pride as an inventor is on the line.
He wants to go to the fair.
And so at this point, the stories really converge as the dads both get lost in the woods. They both are scared of the wolves in the woods that are very real threats in this time of France and in the stories. And they both come upon a palace in the woods. However, the palace in Beauty and the Beast, the movie, is like terrible and run down and like no one lives there. The palace in the story is all lit up. It's very hospitable. Like there's oats for the horse in the stable And then he walks in and there's like a warm fire. There's food laid out for the dad in the original. There's so he like eats his food all the while thinking like, I would really love to ask somebody if, you know, like, basically
this is cool.
He goes in and he tries not to eat for as long as he can, but he's like starving and poor.
Yeah, totally.
So he sees all this food and he's like, I wish someone was here so I could ask, but I'm just going to eat some of this now.
That's fair.
And
that makes more sense to me, because it was always hard in the Disney version for me to believe that Lumiere and Cogsworth would put up with living in that dirty of a palace for all years.
Yeah.
Just looking at the feather duster every day, like, go ahead. Spruce up the place. Waiting on you, man. Quit flirting with me and start dusting.
Well, there's another huge, huge, huge difference. Probably the two biggest differences are no Gaston and no animated characters inside the castle. So
I'm no longer interested in the story. Yeah.
There's no like talking candlesticks and stuff.
Nothing. No, what? That's all an invention of the
what a great
Disney.
Invention.
Yeah, like wow.
There's like enchanted stuff about the castle, but
yeah, of course.
No other characters.
No one's like, do you like the bog roast because he's good?
No.
Wait, no, that's in like the that's in like Jean Cocteau's version as well. The like candlesticks with faces and stuff.
It's in some of the like movie versions. Disney took it to the extent of giving them distinct personalities and names, kind of a la Snow White naming the dwarves. But in any of the like literary versions, there's no animated. You know, inanimate objects coming
it's
to life.
It's
kind
of hard to like write out like the Be Our Guest song and, you know, just like, and then the candle starts dancing, being like, be our guest.
They tried some gray stuff. It was delicious.
And so, anyway, so the original story, the dad's like really wants to ask permission, but there's nobody around to ask.
Right.
And so he gets so tired because he's been walking all day and he just found out he was poor again. And so he finds a super comfy bed and goes to sleep. And he wakes up the next day to find like nice clothes laid out for him, and so he thinks there must be a good fairy who owns this castle. That's like his thought. Like they put out like a chocolate drink for him to drink for breakfast, which I think sounds a great way to have breakfast.
Oh yeah, dude.
Yeah.
So he thanks the fairy to the endless void. He's like, "Thank you, fairy, to the castle." And then he leaves, and as he's leaving, he sees this beautiful garden, and he goes over and finds a rose. So he pulls a branch down, plucks a rose, and that's when the beast comes about.
Uh-oh.
And that's the straw that broke the camel's back.
Don't be talking about roses.
So was it like the beast all this time is like, I should just let it go? I mean, he's being kind of rude, but all right, whatever. He can have the food. He can take the bed. He can have the chocolate drink.
It seems like more like,
and then he like rips down
being a good guest, but like it's kind of things like, it's kind of like the West Wing in the movie version, where it's like, you can have da 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 da, but don't go to the West Wing. It's probably to him. It's kind of like, at least it seems like, I'll be a good host, but don't fucking touch my roses.
Yeah, and I have a quote. What he says is, "You are very ungrateful. I have saved your life by receiving you into my castle, and in return, you steal my roses, which I value beyond anything in the universe. But you shall die for it."
Whoa.
Jesus.
Okay, and so I put razor blades in the oats with the horse.
I was kind of with the beast on this one until the final part of that.
The dying for it. Yeah. So he basically is like, I was this great host. You were a good guest. Everything was fine. And then you're going to steal from me, bro? Like, really? And especially the roses are very valuable to him. And in this, just as a kind of comparison point, the beast isn't really described in the story. It just says frightful. So it's kind of like, as your imagination.
Is he named like the Beast, or is he named Beast?
Yeah, he's a Beast. Okay. Yeah, they call him Beast. Okay. Versus the Disney movie, where the Beast has the head and horns of a bison, the jaws, teeth, and mane of a lion, the eyebrow of a gorilla, the tusk of a wild boar, the arms and body of a bear, and the hind legs and tail of a wolf. So
that is accurate.
The Disney version of it versus like just frightful. Whatever.
Something
you imagine
big and bad.
A lot of people don't know the junk of a porcupine. No one knows that.
It's action packed down there, baby.
I know that.
Why?
You know, Casey, don't worry about my life.
There's certain fan fictions out there that
worry
exist
about
that
your own
life.
Don't worry about my life.
Yeah.
My life is full of wonders.
And so in the original story, the beast basically is like, okay, so I'm going to give you 15 minutes. You can prepare your death and pray. basically.
Okay, and I'm back on the beach side. That seems
crazy. That's fair. Yeah, that's fair.
And so after some begging by the father, the dad is basically like, I was just getting this rose for my daughter. I'm real sorry. The beast is like, fine, okay, I'll give you time. Go, stay your family, bring back one of your daughters, and if she stays willingly in your place, then I'll keep her instead. And
now,
so,
does he mean he's going to kill her instead, or just...
He doesn't say. Her, yeah.
He's like, the beast cares not to elaborate, just bring me the daughter.
He says, as long as she will come willingly and die in your stead. So
I think that this is a great excuse to get rid of one of the shitty daughters.
Seriously. He's just like, I'll be right back.
Well, yeah. Willingly is the key
word. Well, you take
word.
Two for one.
Okay.
The daughter has to come willingly.
It's also kind of a trusting beast where he's like, look, just go home, bring back a daughter. If I was Maurice, I'd be like, oh, yeah, I'll do that. Sure.
The beast has a lot of magic.
He does? Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So there's a lot of ways for him to find out what's going on.
It's not like he can stroll into town and be like, where's Maurice? No. He's supposed to bring back a daughter for me to kill.
And it's a beast on a mission real quick. Where's that guy? Where's that mentor guy?
Can we do a version of Beauty and the Beast where the beast is like Doctor Strange, like opening up portals and stuff like that?
It's like, zoom,
zoom. That would be cool. That would be so cool.
Okay, that makes more sense.
This is a difference in the original and the Disney. Obviously, is the beast in the Disney movie is not like, I'm going to kill you or one of your daughters. Like, he basically just takes the dad, Maurice, prisoner, yeah. And is like...
So much better.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's like, okay, you're my prisoner now, because and in the Disney movie, it's not as much like he was this hospitable host. The Beast has much more of a different personality in the Disney movie. He's got temper, and he's very angry, and so the Beast in that one thinks that the Maurice has come to laugh at him. Like, oh, you've come to laugh at the Beast. Yeah. And so he keeps him as a prisoner, as opposed to... You know, like making him make this terrible choice. And so the dad in the original has no intention of letting any of his daughters come.
I was about to say, what a shitty father. He goes back, he's like, anyone want to die in my stead?
No. So basically,
I'm pretty much killing it.
His thought is, I'm going to go home, spend 3 months with my family, come back and get killed by this beast.
That's fair.
And so he can't keep it from his children what happened. So he like breaks down and tells his daughter.
Is that because, like, the other two were like, where are our gifts, Dad? And then he had to go into that explanation.
See, like, a single tear drip down. He's just like, I don't want to die. I've got, like, 3 good years left.
they did. They asked for... Oh, I forgot one important part. The Beast, in the original, he's, like, pretty nice guy. And besides saying you're going to die for what you did, he gives the dad a trunk full of, he's like, you can put whatever you want from the castle in this trunk and take it home because I'm ruining your life and killing you. So the dad does bring back gold and dresses and stuff for his daughters.
So the beast is really nice in completely unreasonable ways.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Very true.
He's like, really sorry, we gotta murder you.
Let me soften the blow a bit.
But I definitely have to murder you. Like that,
you're gonna die.
That can't
you want
change.
Some quality silver?
That rose ain't growing back, and you didn't even trim it in such a way that it promotes growth in the bush. You just ripped it out like a bear. So,
channeling Uncle Joe right now, Mike.
Yeah,
Uncle Joe is real serious about his rose bushes.
He knows
and pruning them in the proper way. He has instructed us over our years many times.
He'd probably kill somebody if they just ripped out grabbed out some
That's
thorns
a death
and
wish.
Ripped, yeah, and yanked. Don't do that.
So he takes a trunk full of treasures. He comes home, tells his kids what happened, and the two older sisters immediately blame Beauty. They're like, "You wanted the rose."
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're not wrong.
They're kind of not wrong.
And so the older sisters start crying and wailing and making the scene. And Beauty's like, "I'm not gonna cry. Why should I cry? Because I'm going in Dad's place, and I should be comforted knowing I'm saving his life."
Okay, I thought she just like looks at her dad. She's like, I ain't crying.
No.
He's like, you can maybe squirt out a couple tears for me, but...
No, Beauty's immediately like, no, it's fine. I'm gonna go. Like, she's like, no, you're not wrong, sisters. So, I'm gonna go in Dad's place. Like,
I've had enough of this provincial life.
So, the brothers want to go and fight the beast. They, like, nobody is down for this plan. The dad is like, absolutely not. Only the sisters are like, great, let's get rid of Beauty. And so the dad's like, no, you can't fight this guy. He'd definitely beat you up. And the dad's like, I'm really old anyway. So I'm just going to go back and live out this life. And so Beauty, basically, she's like, I'm going to go with you, Dad. And even so the dad is like, I'm going to go do this thing. Beauty is like, I'm going to go and take his place. But she's not telling him that. She's like, I'm going to go with you on this journey.
She's going to see you off.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and then the dad doesn't tell the rest of the kids about all this gold in a trunk. He only tells Beauty, which Beauty agrees is a good idea because her sisters both have suitors. So they're like, let's not tell them about all this gold. Let's them go get married. Their suitors have incomes.
Yeah.
And because Beauty's so good, she's like, I want my sisters to be happy with their new husbands, because even though they're terrible.
But also, let's not give them this money.
Yes. At all. Yeah, pretty much. So they have this money, but so they go to the palace, and again, there's nobody there, but the doors are open, and there's like a great meal laid out, all this stuff. So they eat, and then the Beast comes. And the dad's like about ready to go with him. And the Beast asks Beauty, are you here willingly? She says, yes. And then the Beast's like, get out of here, Dad. Your daughter's here.
Ace.
Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah. So the dad didn't want to leave, but Beauty made him basically. I was like, no, I'm doing this. And partly why she does this is because in the time she eats and then wakes up, in her sleep, some lady comes to her in her sleep and says that her kindness won't go unrewarded, whatever that will mean. And it's like not explained at all any further than that. So
she's just like, all right, cool, I'm good.
Yeah. So the dad leaves, and Beauty is like totally convinced that the Beast is just giving her all his food to fatten her up and eat her. But he doesn't. And she finds this thing called like labeled Beauty's apartment. And so she has this whole apartment after wandering around the castle with a library, a harpsichord, music books. And then she finds this poem in the book that says, welcome, Beauty, banish fear. You are queen and mistress here. Speak your wishes, speak your will. Swift obedience meets them still. So basically, like, you're the master of this castle. So again, this is like really different than the Beauty and the Beast animated movie. No,
she's just like, yeah. Got herself into some sweet digs. Yeah. And like, yeah, everything's working out.
So, yeah, in the animated movie, at this point, the dad is trapped and Belle, of her own volition, goes to find him.
Right.
Yeah. She's, and then, you know, like, takes his place because she's super brave, just like this Beauty is. But the Beast has quite a temper. Belle is much more obstinate about being there and staying there because it's not as clear. Like, in this story, Beauty's like, maybe he's going to eat me, but he's been really nice to me so far. And in the Disney version, he's just been a dick, and she knows that she's going to be trapped there forever. Yeah. So, you know, it's just a different situation. And so to test in the original story, to test this, like, oh, am I really getting whatever I want in this castle? She says all she wants is to see her father. And so similar to the Disney movie, a magic mirror appears and she can see her dad from the magic mirror. So that's kind of proof to her that that it is true that she really is the mistress of this castle. If she can speak and see her dad at will. And so that night, Beast asks if he can eat supper with her. And she's like, do what you want. He's like, nah, you're in charge. I'm not going to do it unless you say it's cool.
She's like, do some jumping jacks.
All right, I guess.
So they have like a really nice conversation. And then he asks her to marry him after
asks her.
Yes.
Okay.
So this is kind of the rest of like the plot of the rest of the story for a little while is they have dinner every night together, right at 9, have a nice conversation. Beast asks her to marry him and she says no. And
nice for 40 pages.
Yeah. It happens for like 3 months straight. That this is going on.
And every time he accepts the answer and he's just like, all right, man.
Yeah,
hey.
Yeah.
She never makes any demands. She's like, bring me 14 swans.
No, they're very like, she's happy that, you know, she thought she's going to have this terrible life. And it turns out that it's not so bad. And she has a friendship with this thing that she thought was a monster. And Beast is like, you know, you're here willingly and do as you will. So it's like, one of the problems with this story is like the Stockholm syndrome thing.
Yeah.
But this version, like, really, she's not like captive, or you know, yeah. like she yeah, is. She's all. Captive, but in a, it's not. I don't know. It's just. It's not. It's a pretty easy read. And no, it's like, easy to understand, like version, how yeah. they can develop a friendship.
This version yeah. weirdly seems less fucked up than the Disney version.
At times, yeah, it's like everything's super nice, and
it does.
She's taken care of, and
yeah, I mean, it's still weird. We can appreciate yeah. it's still weird, but
no. But the thing that I think is different and better about the Disney version is that in the original version, the Beast has no characterization other than he's just like a nice dude.
Yeah.
Like there's no other development, and in the Disney movie, the story, if you really think about it, is the Beast's story. It's not Belle's story. It's yeah. it's how she can change him, yeah. who is a monster.
It is all about he needs to overcome. He's such yeah. a spoiled brat at the start. Yes. That's why I guess the whole curse to begin with. And yeah.
And this one, him. There's no like, why was he cursed? And was he like none of that. So, it, you know, there's a little bit more, I think, character development. I think it's the first Disney movie that really has an equal partnership in people changing each other's lives versus just a princess getting her whole world changed.
Because in this one, there's been no explanation of the curse or like no. why he's a beast. He just is, right?
Correct. Interesting. So that happens. Beauty spends three happy in the original. Beauty spends three happy months there. Basically, she turns him down every night because she's like, "You're my friend, and I'm never going to see you as anything more than that. So please stop asking." But he keeps asking. Friend she's like, "Well, zoned. I'm just going to keep telling you that." And he's fine with that. So
this is actually a lesson to all nice guys everywhere that the friend zone doesn't actually exist. That's something that can be broken. There.
Oh no! Don't let that be the message. No, it's I don't know. I think it's nice because the Beast doesn't really have any expectations. He just yeah. kind of goes in and asks, and's like, "Okay, bye." And then they just are still friends, and it's nice. So
to be fair, every time she turns him down, he does do like the Charlie Brown slow walk away, just kind of like do do do
do. You're like a wah, wah,
so
wah,
this is where.
Shut up, enchanted trombone. He's just like sorry.
This is where like it, the Beast in the story gets not as cool to me. And so, she's kind of been watching her dad in the mirror, seeing on him every once in a while, and she sees
just
that
the daughter's shitting on him every day.
Yeah, his life
he
is
didn't
terrible.
Even bring me and he go, Jesus, Papa.
And so he's sick with grief, her dad, and he's actually like ill and dying.
Oh, shit.
Which is in a sense similar in the Beauty and the Beast movie. Her dad goes out to try to look for her and then gets very sick
To be fair, the father gets sick because every time they cut back to him, he's just still like out in the snow. Like all he had to do was go inside at any point and get dry, but he's like sick because he's in the elements for like weeks.
Yeah, because he cares about his daughter.
He's just like, is she over here? Is she over here? And you're like, you're in the town square. You've searched this already. Go inside. He's like, I should probably keep looking for her.
Well, in the story too, he assumes she's dead. Right?
In the story, yeah, he thinks
because she like took his place with death. So he doesn't know that she's like fine.
Yeah, you know, like yeah, exactly.
It makes sense. But in the movie, yeah, he is just like hanging out in the snow all the time.
So it's his own fault.
In the original, she sees her dad and says, like, I really want to go to him because he's dying. And so in the Disney movie, this is, like, the biggest moment for Beast is when he, like, really can become somebody who feels true love is that he lets her go. And he's like, you have to go to him. I know this is going to curse me for the rest of my life, but you have to go. And in the story, the original, the Beast says, you can go see your dad, but then I'll die with grief. So he's like, yeah, your dad's dying with grief. You could go see him, but then I'm going to die with grief.
There haven't been like the psychological mind games until now. He's just like, well, I guess I better go lay in that coffin right there because I'm going to die. So that's on you.
He becomes very emo really quick and is just like, if you leave, then I'm dying and it's your fault.
Enchanted trombone, start playing.
Play me a dirge.
And so Beauty's
he's just slowly lying down in the coffin.
You did this.
So Beauty says to him that she's like, no, you're my friend and I love you so much as my friend. And
jeez, she's really playing that card hard.
And I don't want to cause your death, so I will go see my dad and I'll come back in a week. And
he's like, we'll see.
Yeah, well, the Beast is like, no, that's fine. But if you come back any later than a week, you killed me.
I'll be dead.
Basically.
You're going to find me in a warm bath.
And so he gives her a magic ring to go see her dad. And so her dad's so happy.
Why does she need a magic ring?
She transports him there. He transports her there, like, right away.
Oh, he fancy.
Like, here's a magic ring. Go. And then you put the magic ring back on, fall asleep, and then the next morning you'll be in my castle again when you want to come back.
Okay.
That's how it works. And so she comes back. Her dad's so happy. And her sisters are very unhappily married. The first one's husband is really full of himself.
Yes.
So he's very vain, a la maybe Gaston.
Nice.
And the second one's husband is too witty and mean. So he's like so witty that all he does is make fun of his wife all the time.
He's like, you probably don't even know what the word esophagus means. I know. Big words.
You big know, words, yeah.
Tony dum-dum words.
Six syllables and more.
So they're envious of beauty, of like, oh, what? We thought you were dead and we were all happy and now we find out you're just living a life of luxury here. Because yeah, she's right? wearing like all these beautiful gowns that the Beast sent her back in, and Beauty wants to give her sisters some, but they like disappear when she tries because the Beast is like, not only for you.
It's only for you, girl.
And so her sisters are just the worst. And so they conspire to keep Beauty there past a week in the hopes that the Beast is so mad that he'll come back and eat Beauty.
Jesus.
So to get this plan rolling, her sisters for the whole week are like really nice to her.
Yeah, of course.
Because they're like, we want you to stay. We love you so much. Blah, blah, blah. And so Beauty is like, oh, my sisters love me. That's so nice. I'll stay. So she ends up staying for like 10 days.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. But then she misses the Beast and she's like full of just guilt. Like, oh, I need to go back. I told him I would. And so she has this vision, especially her guilt's compounded, where she has this vision of she sees him like lying in a ditch in the garden. And she's like, shit, what's that about? And so she decides she's going to go back. So she puts on the ring. Meanwhile, the Beast, since she took longer than a week, has decided to starve himself. So,
jeez.
Yeah. So wow. He's sick with grief, starving himself because Beauty's not back. He was true to his word.
I won't eat until she's back.
And so he is literally like starving in a ditch when she gets back.
Wow.
But says like now he can die happy because he's seen her, which is very similar to the Disney movie where he says, I can die happy now that I've seen you again. So all of this is very different. In the Disney version, Belle is trying to save her father's reputation, shows everyone the Beast, and then a mob mentality grows, and all the Frenchmen led by Gaston try to go and kill the Beast. Yeah, the mob song.
In the shadows, it's a nightmare, but it's one exciting ride.
Beautiful.
So, nice, dude.
It's early morning, so my baritone's coming in smooth.
Real good right now.
So they all go, and then Gaston is like, you think that she could love you when she has someone like me? And the Beast is like, doesn't want to fight him. And then he gets courage when he sees Belle has come back and starts to fight back. And then Gaston's an asshole and stabs him, and the Beast thinks he's gonna die, but he's super happy because he's seen Belle one more time. And so in the Disney, biggest difference is there's no like marriage any point, like no Beast like, you better marry me. Please marry me.
Doesn't come up.
It's more about like growing love for one another and like, you know, these have been some good dates. Like, I really love this girl. And so Beauty sees him in the original story dying there, she says finally, upon seeing him in that state, realizes how much she loves him, not just as a friend, and says she'll marry him. And so from that there, the whole sequence of him turning into a prince, there's fireworks and all this stuff, very similar to the movie. And so he turns back into a prince. And it's very similar to the original, to the Disney, where she kind of looks around. She's like, where's the Beast? As she's seen this Beast transform, she's like, where'd he go? And in the Disney movie, she looks at the prince for a while and she like doesn't believe that it's the same person.
Yeah.
But they do. And here's where all of the backstory about the curse comes in, when the Beast says that a wicked fairy condemned me to remain under that shape until a beautiful virgin should consent to marry me. So
sweet.
a lot of these stories, I learned.
So much love in that. You
yeah.
know?
These fairy tales, a lot of them were for to reassure virginal brides about sex.
So I think you left out parts of the story where right before he asked, he was like, you virgin?
Yeah.
He's like, yeah. He's like, you want to get married?
Chase life is good life, right?
Yeah, right.
It'd be great if he started like changing and then halfway through the transformation, he's like, oh, wait, no, not a virgin. You go back.
He's like, well, what happened? He's just like, never mind.
What'd you do while you're in town?
Yeah.
Did you see that boy down at the Potter's? I know you got to take the Tanner all along, so I wouldn't let you go to town.
Anyway, so that happens, and I'm like, ugh. So kind of like the last couple paragraphs, I'm like, not down with the beast anymore.
So dumb.
What a douche now. Like, yeah.
Well, no. It's not his fault. It's the fairy. She's the one who puts the stipulations on it. Just like, better be a sweet virgin. Better consent to marry. But he's just trying to get his life back.
I'm going to starve myself. I can't live. Blah.
He's just really playing it up in case she like happens to like look in the mirror. He's just like,
ah. Yeah, he's like, ah, I'm so hungry.
And the difference in the Disney movie is that the Beast has the same feelings. He has no will to live anymore, but he's not putting that burden on Belle.
Yeah,
he's not saying, like,
it's a good
you caused this. He's just like, I can't live without her. But, like, she has no idea. He just thinks he's never going to see her again. And he's, like, happy that he was able to let her live her life.
To be fair, when she, like, leaves, like, while she's still definitely on the grounds, he lets out a pretty fierce growl. I'm just like, no!
I know.
And I'd be like, she heard that.
I was like,
she heard that.
We were watching the movie the other day, and I thought the exact same thing. I was like, so she's deaf now?
She's just like,
fuck!
She's like, I'll deal with that later.
Seriously?
Whoa.
Yeah.
He's like, what was that? He's like, stub my toe, don't worry about it. Keep going.
Keep going.
So I had a pop for me. Tell him sorry about the prisoner ship.
Yeah, so then in the original, the lady who came to Beauty in her dream that first night in the castle, she like come, I don't know who, she's some other fairy, and she comes and brings her dad, Beauty's dad, to the castle and all her family to celebrate like this new union. And she says that because Beauty put virtue before either wit or beauty, like, your husband's not beautiful and he's not very smart, but he's a good person. Now you're a queen, so she gets to be queen now, and everybody rejoices.
The daughter's just slow clapping, like, cool.
Yeah. Neat. Well, here's where we get our fun Snow White twist.
Hold on.
So her sisters in a fairy tale, the people who are bad get what they deserve.
Yeah, they do. Oh, that's shit. Why I love these old fairy tales.
So this fairy lady, this is so cruel. I love it. She turns the sisters into statues, but they keep their reason so that they can see Beauty's happiness.
Oh, God.
Wow.
It is in their power to return to their former state by owning their own faults. But it probably won't happen, according to the fairy, because a malicious and envious mind is a miracle to realize.
Damn.
So they're just statues at the front of the castle, and they're just thinking inside their heads,
evolving into
eyes
insanity.
Looking around at Belle and Beauty's happiness.
Oh my
and
god, Belle's that's fine the movie with this? That I want to see.
Yeah,
Belle's fine with this. Beauty's fine.
Belle just comes and slaps the shit out of the statue. Everybody's like, ping, ping, ping.
Yeah,
I just want to see the slow devolution into insanity of these cruel Rosencrantz and Guildensterns, just like watching the happiness surrounding them the entire time, developing them.
Pixar needs to do like an Inside Out sequel where it's just in their minds and it's just falling apart.
Oh my god, that would be so cool.
So awesome.
Yeah, so they, and then they live happily ever after. That's the end.
That's awesome. What a fun ending.
So that's the original Beauty and the Beast.
Woo!
Interesting. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. With the exception of like the manipulation there, it's like I get why Disney did their things, because they kind of need like conflict and a story arc. And so they made good changes there. But it is interesting that the Beast is like pretty cool.
Yeah,
you know, his weird sad trombone part sucks. But like, other than that, it's like he's actually pretty cool.
Yeah, it's definitely not as much of a drastic difference as Snow White's like grim story. And firstly, she's an adult, like she's 17 years old.
Yeah, she's so capable.
No one punches a dead teenager that they're interested in.
That's true.
With.
Correct.
She's
very capable. And I'd say that the Disney version takes Belle like one step further in terms of a fully formed, like, capable woman.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's cool because you do have the Beast, who is kind of this brat and has his temper, and she challenges him still. Yeah. It's pretty cool.
Well, yeah, because she's not helpless at all. Like, she reads, she's independent, you know, it's like, she's like, nah, I don't need a man. Both in the story and in the movie, it's like, yeah, she's just like, whatever.
But there's good similarities in that both of the stories come from a friendship first.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
a very mutual understanding of one another, and an, you know,
things develop over time.
There's something very creepy about the whole lesson of, oh, don't worry that you're marrying this scary man right here. He'll become a prince after you have sex with him. Type of,
the original. Yeah. There's like some end story.
I'm not saying it's perfect. We're saying, you know.
But yeah, I mean, so it's, you know, Disney. Mm. And in the Disney version, like, purposefully, Belle was modeled after after Katharine Hepburn in the Little Women version that she was in, like her version of Jo March. And so very, like very purposefully said, we want to make a very feminist princess, which is
cool.
A very different princess. Even, I mean, Ariel was. It was a huge hit, but like Ariel's by no means. She's all about her man.
Yeah.
She's
all about that man. Yeah. She's like, I don't need to talk ever again. Fuck it.
So there's been a couple of other film versions that just like of note to bookend. But so there was this French version of the movie in 1946, mm-hmm. La Belle et la Bête by
Jean Cocteau.
Cool.
It's like a very well renowned, like everybody's lists of best French films and best films of that decade and blah, blah, blah. So that's really cool. There's a 1952 Russian animated version that has not had any English subtitles ever put on it. So
for good reason.
Yeah. There's a 1962 version of The Beast as a Werewolf, and the makeup was done by Universal's Jack Pierce, which he did all the monster movie makeup for Frankenstein and The Mummy and stuff. So there's this is my favorite one. The theme to the music video for I'd Do Anything for Love by Meatloaf is Beauty and the Beast themed. I've linked the video, so please go watch it.
I will do anything for love,
but I won't do that.
That song suddenly makes a lot more sense to me. That's what he's talking about.
Yeah.
He won't.
Yeah.
You know?
He loves Beauty and the Beast.
There's a 2003 version that is a Viking period film called Blood of Beasts.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. There's a 2008 film called Spike that's like a horror version. There's Beastly, which came out a couple years ago with Vanessa Hudgens and
Alex Pettifer,
and it's like modern day New York. And then one that's very, very so I always like to try to like what's the closest to the original, and it's probably the version that came out in 2014. It's French German. Called La Belle et la Bête, or Beauty and the Beast, and it stars Léa Seydoux and Vincent Cassel, directed by Christophe Gans, and it's very close to the Villeneuve story, so the very, very original one with, like, the fairy backstories and that kind of stuff. So
interesting.
And then there's, like, a bunch of TV shows, like Linda, the Beauty and the Beast one from the 80s with Ron Perlman and Linda Hamilton, and then, like, a different show, and... Beauty and the Beautician. So
it's still on? I think so.
The Kristen Crook one? No. Not anymore.
Well,
it came out like a couple years ago. And then Once Upon a Time, of course, has a very important Beauty and the Beast storyline. So that's Beauty and the Beast. There's a Beauty and the Beast in a nutshell, and Disney this one, you could say the Disney movie made some really good changes.
Yeah.
But in all, definitely not as drastic as the difference between the other fairy tale we've looked at.
Right. They had a whole 10 pages to work with in this one.
It's a lot more story there, you know?
The Disney movie speaks for itself. So we're all really excited for the version that's coming out this Friday, starring Emma Watson and Dan Stevens. And Dylan, for your edification, with Lumiere's Ewan McGregor, Cogsworth is Ian McKellen, Emma Thompson is Mrs. Potts.
Luke Evans is Gaston. We got Josh Gad as LeFou.
Kevin Kline is Belle's dad.
Everybody, man.
Audra McDonald is in it. Stanley Tooch is in it.
The Toochers.
A new
character.
He's a new character. Casey, that was awesome. So do go check out the movie, guys, because I'm curious, like, do they make any changes? Is it very loyal to the Disney? I assume it will be, but, you know, we'll see. We'll see what's changed.
Visually alone, it's probably going to be just
incredible. The new one. It's going to be, it's already going to be even more feminist, like, which is super cool. Like, Belle doesn't wear a corset or a bustle at all. She's like, nah, fuck that. And her shoes are, wears cool boots in her costume, her blue dress.
Well, choosing Emma Watson too is, like, you know, a very prominent feminist statement. And today I was like, yeah, we're making a point here.
Statement,
like,
film. That's cool.
So they're going to take it further.
Well, that's awesome, Casey. I think now that we're all experts on Beauty and the Beast, we've gotten through basically all the nits and the grits. I think it's time for the
quiz. Pop quiz. It's time for the pop quiz. Quiz. Pop quiz. We'll laugh when Nick loses. Pop quiz.
All right, man. So what do you got for us?
Okay.
Try to stump us.
I'm going to.
Bet you can. But you can.
Okay, so in one line of the mob song in the Disney version of the movie, Gaston the song sings "Screw your courage to the sticking place," and that is from a very famous play. So that line. So I would like you to guess at what play it's from.
Your courage to the sticking place. I'm gonna go Richard II.
Okay.
I don't know. Dylan, you got anything?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Macbeth.
Ooh, interesting. That's probably more likely.
Nick,
Death of a Salesman. Go.
I was going to say Death of a Salesman. Actually, I was thinking about that.
Do it.
I'll go Death of a Salesman.
Dylan is right.
Nice,
it is from Macbeth. Macbeth says it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, it might be Arthur Miller or something like that. I was like, I don't know if it's that old. Okay, yeah.
Solid.
Okay, so in one scene of the movie, there is a point where the Maurice comes upon some signs that are very faded.
Yes.
You can't see which direction he's going in. All these signs have some cities that you might not find in provincial France. So what are name some of the cities that might have been on these signs?
San Antonio, Texas.
Anaheim. Oh, that's
interesting. Yeah. Tokyo.
Anaheim is on the sign.
Nice,
yeah.
Dude.
I'll give you a throwback to, like,
I didn't think about
to Disneyland. Yeah.
That's
so
cool.
It's Anaheim is the Disney tie-in, and the rest are where some of the animators lived. So it says Saugus, Newhall, and Valencia.
All right, so cool. I was close.
On the signs.
All right.
Okay, so this one's kind of like a two-parter, but this is the last one. So there were we always love to talk about, like, who could have played a certain part.
Oh, yeah.
So there were a ton for the Beast. And that's not my question. Like seriously, so many people were considered for the Beast. Lawrence Fishburne, Val Kilmer. No, the 1991 version.
Really?
Lawrence Fishburne, Val Kilmer, Donny Osmond, Patrick Swayze, all considered, which all would have been awesome. But Cogsworth also had some very famous people in the running to play him.
Oh my God.
So first part of the question is, who was it going to play Cogsworth, or thought of?
Christopher Lloyd.
Okay. Ooh. Christopher Lloyd.
He's very much like, we gotta go back to the future kind of already, you know.
Yeah. What about you, Dylan?
Well, first off, who plays Cogsworth now?
That's part of my second part of this question.
Yeah, I don't know.
Not somebody who is very well known for their voice acting now.
Okay.
I'm gonna go with Dustin Hoffman was considered.
Interesting.
I'm gonna go with Brando.
Interesting. Brando. So first it was written for John Cleese and he turned it down.
I can see that. I can totally see that.
And then Patrick Stewart was in talks to do it, but he had filming conflicts with Star Trek. So he couldn't.
Damn. They should have just used the same audio from Star Trek. Put it in.
Could have put it in there, yeah.
So, actually he was voiced by David Ogden Steers, whom a lot of people of a different generation, I grew up watching MASH. He is Charles Winchester III in MASH.
Okay.
So he comes in to replace, like, Frank Burns as a character. But he is, so my second part of this question is that David Ogden Steers is one of those routinely used Disney guys who has done tons of Disney voices after Cogsworth. So if you can name any other Disney voice that he also voiced, knowing that he did the voice of Cogsworth.
I think of his kind of the timbre of his voice.
And there's one that's really big and popular, and then the rest are more small characters.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to go with Abu.
Abu. Okay.
I'm going to go Fazu. From Mulan.
From Mulan.
I was trying to do that.
Wait,
too.
I'm going to change mine to the big lady who's like, Fa Mulan. That, that lady instead.
I'm going to go with like the bad guy in Tarzan.
Oh, interesting. Okay. That's a good choice. Clayton. No, nobody got that one.
Are you sure? You need to look up Mulan cast again.
Who's Clayton?
I don't know who did his voice, but David Ogden Steers, most people could recognize him again as Governor Ratcliffe in Pocahontas.
Like the big guy?
The big guy, yeah. That's him. He also is the narrator for Beauty and the Beast. He is the archdeacon in Hunchback of Notre Dame at the very beginning of the movie. He also voiced Wiggins in Pocahontas, so he was Ratcliffe and his little assistant. He was Fenton Q. Harcourt in Atlantis, and then Dr. Jumba in Lilo and Stitch. So he's done a bunch, and he does all the narration for all the Winnie the Pooh movies. So he's done a bunch.
Wow, cool. Yeah.
And the genie. the genie. Well, cool, Casey. Thank you so much for taking us through that. Just in time for Beauty and the Beast. I'm so excited to see this new chapter.
Yeah, I'm real pumped about it.
You know, in the never ending telling of this tale. So thank you guys for going along with that. Do check us out on social media. We have a lot of fun stuff that's Beauty and the Beast related.
We just posted the link of the Ariana Grande John Legend version. How does it compare to Celine Dion? You tell us.
You tell us, man. We'll have a side by side.
It won't compare.
Yeah. We'll have a side by side comparison.
Celine Dion
to Brian McKnight.
Either way, do go check out our stuff on our social media. Just search for us on the Brothers Murph on any form of social media. You'll find us there.
And we'll be posting lots of other fun facts about the Disney movie that we couldn't get to in the podcast because I have like a zillion.
Right. There's a lot more to get into. So go peep us out on that. Leave us a 5-star review on whatever app you use to listen to us with. We'd really appreciate that, and some feedback would be lovely. So thank you. And for now, I have been Michael E. Murphy.
I'm Nick Murphy.
I'm Dylan White.
And Casey Brown
was our guest. So thank you so much. And we are, as always, imploring you to stay curious and go beast mode sometimes, dude.
That's a sequel. It's a CrossFit. Like Beauty and the Beast.
Beauty and the Beast mode. He's just like, I ain't never go back to human. I ain't never go back to human. I'm just going to live.
Get more beast. More beast.
Then she kisses him. He's like, oh, now my gains.